From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a meme world we live in. Take a single barbed idea, a funny phrase, an image that pops with meaning or potential, set it loose on the web, and watch it go. Cats that comment on life, Hillary Clinton in a grabbing moment that begs for a caption, a video gone viral that lights up the absurdity of existence, all memes. They're everywhere, but on the web, they rule and replicate. They make a culture. This hour on Point, the age of memes. You can join the conversation. What's your favorite internet meme? Epic fail? Nope, it's just Chuck Testa. What's the power of a great meme? The culture of our age of memes. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Christina Shi, founder, co-founder of RaffleCon. Raffle as in roll on the floor laughing. It's an internet culture culture conference devoted to discussing what makes memes work, why they work, and where it's all going. Christina, it's a pleasure to have you right here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And with us from New York is Brad Kim, editor at knowyourmeme.com. As he highlights memes and other viral content that are trending up online. Site's just been nominated for this year's Webby Award for Best Cultural Blog. Brad Kim, congratulations and welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me here.
It's great to have you. All right, let's dive in. Christina, you know, we're going to have listeners who have been living the meme life since they could get to a keyboard.
Yep.
And even before. And you're going to have others who, you know, this is as weird and unknown as rock and roll in 1956 or something.
Yep.
So let's just start with the very basics. We'll get to internet meme, but start bigger. Meme is bigger than that, bigger than the internet. What's a meme?
M-E-M-E, right. At its core, a meme is basically an idea that replicates itself. So that can be anything. It's incredibly broad. It can be braiding your hair, right? That was something that someone came up with at some point and then got passed down through the ages by other people who saw it and thought, that's a good idea.
I'll
so
do that.
Braiding your hair is a meme.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But on the internet, meme has been sort of taken to mean specifically a piece of content that goes viral or spreads very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say more specifically than that, I think the most proper use of meme is something that goes viral and encourages other people to make their own versions of it, to sort of adapt it to their particular situation.
So, for example, let's take this texts from Hillary. And this
right.
came after there was a photograph that got out into the world of Hillary Clinton on one of those big government airplanes. She was flying to or from Libya, I forget. She's sitting there in a pair of kind of cool-looking shades with this nonchalant sort of Clint Eastwood tough look on her face.
And she's wants to.
And she's, yes, and she's texting. She's looking down and texting. And suddenly everybody in the world seems to be putting a caption to this thing.
Right.
There you've got the kind of meme that replicates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is not new. I mean, we've had caption contests for photos for a long time now. But on the internet, there's no gatekeeper that says, this, we've decided, is the best caption for the photo, and that's the one we'll publish
right.
in our next magazine next month, right? Everyone can make their own caption and share it, and it's instantaneous. And people, you know, created all these really funny scenarios with her and other heads of state texting back and forth. And
I'm looking at some right here. She's got above Jon Stewart saying, Daily Show this week. And the cool, tough, sunglassed Hillary Clinton says, already booked Colbert. Or Ryan Gosling is on his cell phone, you know, saying to her, hey, girl. She's texting back, it's Madam Secretary.
Hillary said that that's her favorite one, actually.
No doubt. Oh, here's a Facebook founder saying, hey, guess what I just bought? And she's texting back, a shirt with a big boy collar, you know, to the how many billionaire or Joe Biden texting to her. So you know what the bartender says? And a sober, stone-faced Hillary Clinton texting back, really, Joe? Mitt Romney, any advice? He's texting to her. She's texting back in this meme photo, drink to Romney, I guess, as in loosen up. I mean, Brad, what made this photograph, for example, so open to being a widely grabbed, mimetic foundation for commentary?
Well, I think a good beginning point would be just the composition of the picture. Like you said, you know, she's wearing sunglasses. She has this poker face thing going on. And, you know, the fact that she looks so stately as it has been, as she has been characterized as that before. So it was, I think it was a, it was begging for captions, like you described earlier. And yeah, I think that was definitely the key point of that. And the fact, you know, with lots of image caption memes, they tend to spread very quickly. And this is facilitated by microblogging services. So with this one, I believe Tumblr was the main platform where it, you know, it was really generated and drew participation from other readers. So something, a hub site where all of these images can be compiled in a neat fashion also helps to, you know, make it spread more.
Sure, and everybody's got their take on it with the caption they offer, but they're all built off, it seems to me, the meme itself is this single image of her as tough, unflappable, kind of icy, the Clint Eastwood thing. That's, and everybody's having fun with that meme, I guess.
Right, yeah. I would say in the last year or so, it became really popular to find these images that sort of represented iconic moments. I would say that Pepper Spray Cop, which was an image of a police pepper spraying some Occupy protesters
in
right
California,
in the face in California.
Right. So casually. This
very
sort of
casually. He looks like he's watering
hefty,
his lawn, right? And the protesters are screaming in the background and covering up their eyes. And that image became so iconic because, you know, it really is one of those images that, you know, speaks for itself, like this image. And it represents this moment that people can then use. So that image stopped representing just a moment in Occupy, and it started representing oppression everywhere, right? So you had people took that image and photoshopped it into, you know, him pepper spraying the founders as they're signing the Declaration of Independence.
George Washington and all the rest.
Right.
I've even seen it pasted into the Sistine Chapel. God is reaching down to
exactly,
man, and they return this casual jerk cop pepper spraying the Lord Almighty.
Exactly, yeah. And I think for in this instance, it's sort of like this idea of Hillary as a like completely unflappable person and who's just, you know, texting back all these snarky replies. I think part of the magic of it is that we don't know what Hillary texts to people.
Right.
And the fact that she texts at all like makes sense, of course, in this modern age. But it's kind of fascinating for people.
It could have been Bill Water the Petunias. And we have
right,
no
yeah,
idea.
Exactly.
They're not all about politics. They're not all about cops and pepper spray. Some of them are just really sort of weirdly existential. Here's one, 2009, David DeVore uploaded a video of his son, David DeVore Jr., on a car ride home after having anesthesia at the dentist's office. Now, when this little clip of video went up, it got 5 million views in its first week. It's now been viewed over 109 million times. Little David after dentist.
Is this real life?
Yeah, this is real life.
I feel funny. Why is this happening to me?
It's okay, bud. It's just from the medicine. Okay? No, it won't be forever.
Is this going to be forever, Brad Kim? I mean, just right there, you can see why this became a meme. It's so loaded with sort of all the existential questions. Is this real life? I feel funny. Why is it happening? Is it going to last forever? All in the mouths of a babe, a very young boy, Brad.
Right. I think David After Dentist is one of the prime examples of, like you said, innocent children's ranting or, you know, rambling videos, which has really become a, you know, subgenre of videos on its own. And I think the homemade movie aspect of it and all the answers that David gives, totally just made it a perfect recipe for something to go viral on YouTube.
Let's get a call from Michael in Worcester, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I first heard about the term meme in terms of cultural evolution as an analog to biological evolution.
Yes.
And in biological evolution, it's very clear what determines the success of a mutation. It's fitness and reproduction. And I'm curious from your guest how they explain what actually drives the success of a cultural mutation like a meme.
Great question. Of course, Richard Dawkins, evolutionary biologist, came up with it because he said it's really information, ideas at the heart of everything. We know how it works with DNA and evolution. How does it work? What determines the success here, Christina?
Well, I would say that, you know, a lot of these internet memes that we've been talking about, while we call them memes, like I said earlier, it's not exactly the correct usage of the word. I think that the success is how many people pay attention to it and how it adapts. So, for example, something like the lolcat, right? This is just an image of a cat.
Laugh out loud cat doing something funny.
Right. It's an image of a cat doing something funny with a caption on it. Mm-hmm. That concept is a lot longer lived than a lot of the other things that we've talked about because it's so simple and it's so adaptable. People can really make that into any situation, and everyone likes cute pictures of animals. So it's something that you know, started years ago and is still going strong.
But you can go much bigger, hop off the web, get out into the real culture. People look at, let's say,
mullets,
images,
bad meme,
or Jesus and the resurrection, or Jesus on the cross, and you've got an image there that for thousands of years now has pulled a whole load of ideas along with it and a whole lot of people around it. We'll look at that and much more when we come back. Christina Shih is with us from RaffleCon and Brad Kim from KnowYourMeme.com. Douglas Rushkoff joins us when we return. You can join the conversation this hour. Are you a meme meister, a meme fiend, firing off snappy captions under lolcats and quoting Chuck Testa? 800-423-8255 is our number. A meme behind us right here, Rick Astley, is never going to give you up, had a big history of its own. 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about memes, internet memes, and the idea of viruses and images now shaping our culture in so many ways. Christina Shih is with us. She's co-founder of RaffleCon. It's an internet culture conference devoted to discussing what makes memes work, why they work, where it's all going. They'll be having their big, what, every other year gathering in just a couple of weeks now. Brad Kim is with us from New York, editor of KnowYourMeme.com. Douglas Rushkoff joins us in a moment, and you can join us right now. Are you a meme fiend? Did you go wild with texts from Hillary? Are inside jokes and captioned images on the web now creating our culture? What's the power, the punch of a great meme? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. We've got a lot to learn here. Here's the Bed Intruder song. Okay, I'm a babe in the woods sometimes here, but Auto-Tune is an audio program. It adjusts pitch. One of the most famous Auto-Tune songs is the Gregory Brothers Bed Intruder song, 2010. This is remixed over a local news segment from Huntsville, Alabama, part of their series Auto-Tune the News. The star was Antoine Dodson, who saved his sister from a rapist who was trying to break into their house. There was a tape of that, and then a song laid down around it. The Bed Intruder song reached number 3 on the iTunes R&B charts. Now has over 100 million views on YouTube.
He's climbing your windows, he's snatching your people up.
Okay, there's just a piece of Memesville on the web. Brad Kim, so what's going on here? Is this tape of what he originally said, or someone who just took the words and put them to music? What's happening here, Brad?
So, I mean, I've heard this song, you know, many, many times, but it's still really, really good. So it was started as a local newscast about a home intrusion, and Antoine Dodson came on as a talking head and family of the victim to kind of just describe the situation and how, you know, how the intrusion took place.
And this is what he actually said: "Hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife."
Right, he was very worked up. It was not your typical talking head you see in newscasts. He was very, very genuine about what he meant to say, and I think that definitely connected to a certain level with lots of people. So the whole auto-tuning and the remix process really just started remotely outside of that local area where it was completely completely irrelevant in terms of actual news value, but it was more of the connection that the viewers felt when they watched the video.
And it was just such a vivid statement. He's climbing in your window. In your window. He's snatching your people up. I mean, this is like the fear of everybody, and now we've got it set to music, and off we go. Here's another one, the Velociraptor, an image of a Velociraptor seemingly deep in thought. Text overlaid on the image depicts his metaphysical musings. In July 2011, YouTube used Kampfverein, uploaded a spoken compilation.
If you ate pasta... And then antipasta. Would you still be hungry? If good things come to those who wait, isn't procrastination a virtue? What color is a mirror?
The Velociraptor ponders the meaning of life. It's picked up all over the place. It's an internet meme. Eric in Murfreesboro, Tennessee is calling. Hi, Eric, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
No problem, Tom. Thank you very much, and good to talk to you. My favorite is someecards.com. It's kind of a newer thing, but they have tons of generated images. Like, they've already got, you know, dad talking to a kid playing t-ball, or, you know, a coach talking to basketball player, or just somebody standing there talking, and you can fill in your own caption, as many of these memes are, and it's just really funny because it's all animated, and you know, you can change the colors around and share them on Facebook, and they're always just really funny because they look like a normal e-card.
So,
you know?
Hey, Eric, what do you think? Is it just like a moment's fun, just a way to pass the time, or are we making our culture up, little caption by caption here?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, you know, get to have some fun in a moment, but also, you know, get to touch on social commentary, or, you know, open up a, you know, insider joke between you and a couple of friends. I think it goes, you know, every which way, honestly.
Eric, I appreciate your call, and let me get one more right here from Pete in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Pete, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I've got something that I saw about a week ago. It was a runner at the end of a marathon who had like a photogenic finish where he smiled and he looked great.
Yeah.
And the guy was on Good Morning America like the next day they got him there. And I just wondered if Know Your Meme has seen that become a meme, or if that's just a funny picture.
I think it has, Brad Kim, this sort of incredibly photogenic guy. Isn't that like now in the meme-iverse?
Yes, he is. And he is, I think, from an objective point of view, fair-looking guy. And, you know, in the picture, really, the most interesting about that picture is the juxtaposition between people in the background and ridiculously photogenic guy's face, because everyone in the background is in mid-breath, and they're really just struggling to just finish the run, and he just happens to be having the most charming smile in that photo. And I think, to an extent, this has been seen before, you know, this idea of fame bombing, or just really kind of decisively taking on a herd mentality to promoting one person in a place that we call the internet.
So there he is, that kind of above the crowd, sort of finding
his
own.
He's a people's hero.
Yeah,
I think people
hero.
Have identified right. him as somebody that they really want to support.
Off on his own right. moonbeam, and everybody's writing captions for that. Not everybody is in love with this. Here's a comment from online from our listeners. Drew says, "Our ability to demonstrate our boundless stupidity is apparently without limits. I'm so glad we're focused on solutions to the problems we face and not a cat flushing the toilet or an intentionally misspelled phrase." I mean, there's the critique coming back, is saying that some of this internet meme stuff has descended into just kind of fiffle.
For sure. And I think that, you know, earlier when we were talking about is this building up our culture, or is this just a funny picture, I would really argue there's no distinction between the two. I mean, if you look back in history, mm-hmm. how many of Shakespeare's plays involve just like jokes about flushing the toilet, essentially, right? It's there's that artificial
yes,
line
though they
between
they were that and more.
They were that and more, and I would argue that internet memes are that and more. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a good number that are just not really meaningful and ways to pass the time, but there's also some that I think will go down in history and I think are a way for people to express themselves about what's happening at the moment in a very powerful way that gets a lot across and is clearly taking on traction, like texts from Hillary.
There's a ton of commentary there and attitude and basic ideas about human existence, and it's all
it's just sort of how we're expressing ourselves.
And churning constantly.
Yeah. What's the difference, I would say, between like the Bed Intruder song as a commentary and, you know, any number of ditties that happened in the 60s, the folk songs that got passed around to express social
blowing
issues?
Blowing in the
I
wind.
I think they're exactly the same.
Christina Shi, Brad Kim, please stand by. Very happy to have right now with us from New York City, Douglas Rushkoff, media theorist and author. He's the originator of the term viral media. That's down in the heart of all this. Been writing about the internet for over 20 years. Author of Media Virus and Program or Be Programmed. Douglas Rushkoff, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hey, good to be with you, Tom.
So with the amplification and speed and replication power of the internet, are memes, which have been around forever, just not named, I guess, but are they now more powerful somehow, or at least numerous, Doug, than they were in the past?
Well, in some sense, what we're seeing is a restoration of the kind of, you know, lateral peer-to-peer media and conversation that was kind of usurped by broadcast media for the last century. I mean, in the old days, you know, when people would gather in the town square, it was mimetic. It was mimetic content moving around. You know, the rumor about, you know, who's the priest having sex with, or whose chickens are good, or what happened here. People were passing around gossip, sort of in a mouth to mouth way. The way we can now spread ideas and share ideas and replicate ideas in this kind of very what feels like a new sexy way, really. And that's only because now we can combine and rework and re-engineer all these things ourselves.
Is gossip, a bit of gossip, a meme in itself, or does it have to be something iconic, a phrase, you know, something that's particularly catching, particularly mimetic?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's successful memes and there's less successful memes, just as there are successful ideas, I guess, and less successful ones. So, I mean, there are just because an idea doesn't replicate doesn't mean it's not a meme. It's just, I suppose, not a good meme. You know, it's not a meme that's insisting that it be replicated as strongly as others. But the way I look at it is, a lot of times it has a whole lot less to do with the meme itself, with the gene, if you will, with the code of information, as much as the protein soup that the gene is living in our case, the culture that the meme is trying to replicate in. So I look at memes less in their own right then for what do they tell us about ourselves as a culture? What hidden agendas, if you will, of our culture are the memes exploiting in order to replicate?
You talk about cultural or social immune responses almost. Say that Michael Jackson inspired a kind of racial immune response, or Madonna a sexual immune response that made them quickly become, have the power of memes and more. What do you mean by an immune response there, Doug?
Well, you know, in a biological virus is able to succeed in an organism when it can interpolate itself into our genetic code, into our DNA. It sort of looks for the weak or confused places, the things that we won't recognize, the unresolved parts of our own code until we recognize it. And these internet memes or these media viruses do the same thing in culture. The ones that replicate are the ones that find our unresolved issues, whether it's something about religion. They look for the things that we haven't yet been able to deal with. You know, just like you find that, you know, you can find that kid in school who's vulnerable in a certain way and poke him again and again and again with the same line until he learns to toughen up. That's sort of what happens to our culture. Usually it's racial memes or sexual memes. I mean, and those are the ones that succeed, you know, time and time and time again.
Christina, I guess Richard Dawkins' point when he first came up with the term was that we think in terms of genetics and DNA driving everything, but he was saying, well, it's information, really. And in some ways, all of our physical corpus is just a buggy for information, ideas to write on. Memes are powerful in and of themselves as ideas and maybe even, you know, drive us.
Yeah, and I think I really like the, to pull it back to the biological analog, I think that we've always had these memes. You know, everyone has always come up with ideas, and catchphrases are not new in any sense of the word, right? But I think that the difference that the internet brings to the equation is that it's faster. The incubation period is faster. So mm-hmm. What's more exciting specifically to me is that more people are allowed to participate and participate at a larger range. So I think just like Douglas just said, you know, there was a time when to be heard, you had to be a broadcast person mm-hmm. or you were only heard by the people around you. Mm-hmm. Now, anyone can go and make, you know, who made the text from Hillary? I don't actually even know. And that's part of why we started RaffleCon, was to try to bring out some of these voices.
You're actually going to have the boy who come home from
the dentist.
We have
David and Antoine both coming.
They're coming to your next one.
That's right.
They're in the flesh.
That's right.
Wow, it's amazing. The meme made flesh. We're talking about memes and the making of contemporary culture. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a call from Washington, D.C. Drew is on the line. Drew, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was calling in regards to a meme that maybe you or some of your panelists might be familiar with. It's been spreading around the internet this week. It's called The Inappropriate Timing of Bill Clinton. And it's this funny photo where Obama and Clinton are both coming out to start a press conference. And Bill has this big, funny, goofy grin on his face, and Obama kind of has his hand down on his head. And this has been making the rounds on the internet with a bunch of different captions. And I actually am the original photographer of that photo.
Oh.
Got it.
That's funny.
Actually, a year and a half ago, yeah. So it's sort of interesting to see a photo I shot almost 2 years ago, and it's suddenly, just now this week, taken on a life of its own and spread all over the internet.
It is very funny. I've seen it. Bill Clinton doing kind of a song and dance, hands out, big smile like he's tap dancing, and Obama standing like the soberest straight man you ever saw. Brad Kim at knowyourmeme.com. Do you see that trending in the internet world?
Yes, certainly. And it's a pleasure to hear from the original photographer. Yes, it has been trending this week, actually. And the way that we've been kind of understanding is, you know, to an extent, it was a piggyback success of Bill
Clinton's
wife. Text
from Hillary, maybe, yeah.
Right, right. Madam Secretary's text from Hillary meme. I think another meme that is kind of involved in here is the captions for the Bill Clinton one tend to always point to the Monica Lewinsky scandal from 10 years back.
Yeah, or come on,
some
baby.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But it's an iconic moment. He looks so loose. He looks so Bill, just like she looked so Hillary there. And there's Obama looking so very Barack or President Obama at that moment. Douglas Rushkoff,
right.
We just got you for another minute. Forgive me, Brad, but we're going to lose Doug here. And I just want to ask Doug where you think the amplification and replication power of the internet takes memes as an influencer in our lives, in our culture?
Well, I guess what it really, the main shift is that it would allow for the amplification and replication of memes that, if anything, more accurately exploit and express our cultural, what I'm calling our cultural immune response, but really our cultural dream together. You know, in a pre-internet media space, the kinds of memes that spread are the ones that, you know, for the most part, that, you know, William Randolph Hearst or Rupert Murdoch want to rain down upon us. Eventually, I mean, sure, some work and some don't. Mm-hmm. But now we're living in a much more fluid meme space where not only will more genuinely successful memes triumph, but I think more and more people will be able to recombine these ideas. We're going to see many more ideas, memes having sex with each other, than you would in a more controlled media space.
Wow. Hold on to your hats. The future's coming. I guess millions and billions of people putting up their memes and they don't lie. And you point that out for us. Douglas Rushkoff is author of Program or Be Programmed. It's always great to have you, Doug. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
Christina Shi, please stand by with Raffle Khan, Brad Kim at knowyourmeme.com. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. Nyan Cat behind us. We'll talk about it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about memes, internet memes, and the idea viruses and images now shaping our culture in so many ways. Brad Kim is with us from New York City. He's editor of knowyourmeme.com. For a video of Know Your Memes, best memes of 2011, you can go to our website at onpointradio.org. Christina Shi is with me. She's co-founder of RaffleCon, an internet culture conference. They look at what makes memes work and why they work and where the whole meme thing is going. This year's RaffleCon is just 2 weeks away, May 4th and 5th in Cambridge, Massachusetts. For a link to all the details, you can go to our website as well, onpointradio.org. And you can join us this hour. What is the power, the punch of a great meme? What turns a flying cat or Ryan Gosling or David After Dentist into internet catnip? Luddites, are you starting to get it? Is this a new center, the new center of pop culture? Are memes, writ large, the stuff of all culture? We're at 800-423-TALK. All right, we got a lot of response from people online just throwing out the memes that they're into. Nick likes socially awkward penguin and bad joke eel. All right. Esteban Carlos likes introverted cat. It makes me feel better about myself, he says. What Tears of Kurt says troll face or anything with My Little Pony are right up there. For a wonderful combination of the true Google Trollestia, I don't know. This is beyond me. We've got fail here. Of course, that was an Alex says Ryan Gosling. Hey, girl. Text from Hillary. I mean, in your world, Christina, are these all? I mean, I recognize a lot of these, but are these all like just sort of general knowledge?
Yeah, I would say so. A lot of the ones that were mentioned, the adjective animal combinations, so socially awkward penguin, bad joke eel, those are what we call advice animals. And I'm not really sure how the whole thing came up. There was originally a picture of this really happy looking dog, and somebody turned it into advice dog. Mm-hmm. So it was a happy dog on this rainbow background, and it would give you terrible advice.
These would give you as in captions that people post under it.
Yeah, so people would post captions of just like really, really bad advice. Mm-hmm. And then there became a whole pantheon of them. So there's an advice dog, and there's also a socially awkward penguin who, you know, sets up a scenario and then just like botches it in the worst way possible, who I really relate to. But there's all of these, and now, you know, people express their days by making little advice animals, like, this thing happened to me, and I'm going to express it with, you know, socially awkward penguin or one of these other advice animals, which I find really amazing.
Brad, we've got people who are into this, and others just responding like, come on, give me a break. Jill writes, memes are the equivalent of the cultural revolution of the 60s. Give me a break. Every time I decide to look at one of these memes, I think, what's the big deal? Total waste of time, says Jill. What do you say, Brad?
Well, I think to an extent, it is a waste of time. But you know, I think what we're seeing now more and more is, you know, getting away from that just, you know, sort of meaningless exchange to a more of a building towards a myth, so to speak. I think what starts as a, you know, is kind of like there was no thoughts involved in creating something like, I don't know, socially awkward penguin. It was just more of a way to humorously express oneself. But the fact that it replicated and drew mass participation from other people, and what converges is this myth or pantheon of things, as Christina mentioned, and that, I think, is a constructive process.
I mean, Christina, the socially awkward penguin can sound silly, can look silly, but when you put them all together, it becomes What a kind of gathering point for people working out social awkwardnesses,
right,
which are fundamental to almost all of us.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, again, talking about memes or internet memes even as a sort of a flat thing is really, really misleading. That's like talking about all rock and roll music. And of course, mm-hmm, when rock and roll first came out, oh, the consternation, right? So yeah, many people thought yeah, this was a huge waste
of time.
You call
this music?
Satan, mm-hmm, all of that, right? But, you know, now we look back and there are unarguably classic rock and roll songs that will always be remembered and are in the canon of, you know, great music. There's also, you know, the 18 million different garage bands that mm-hmm high school kids form that wrote terrible songs about how they were socially awkward. And to me, there's no difference between Socially Awkward Penguin and that. It's not, we can't expect all memes to be meaningful because that's like expecting all culture to be meaningful, and it simply isn't.
But the interactive quality makes it inevitable that important things can come up here. Dennis writes to us on Facebook. He says, you know, his favorites are the unoffensive, he says, racist memes like successful black man or ordinary Muslim man memes. Describe those for us, Christina. What are those? What do they do? And what's going on with them?
Yeah, so successful black man is an image of a black guy in a suit, and there's a caption above him and below him. And the caption above him will start off sounding like something a stereotypical black man would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of the bottom caption gives a twist ending.
But I do it in my Mercedes or whatever.
Or it sort of finishes the sentence, but in a way that you totally wouldn't expect from mm-hmm the way the sentence starts. Mm-hmm. An ordinary Muslim guy does the same thing, but with, you know, sort of terrorist threat at the top, and then it finishes in a way that's really, really casual.
So are these magnifying stereotypes or cutting through stereotypes?
I think sometimes when, again, it's entirely up to the implementation, right? So mm-hmm anyone can make one of these. And mm-hmm I've seen people totally not understand what they're supposed to be and just be racist with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. But I think when done well, it's sort of the whole concept is subverting these stereotypes and saying that, you know, we have all of these stereotypes about black men and Muslim men, but actually, you know, there are ordinary and successful versions of both of those, and that's great. And I don't think a lot of it is actually that political. I think there's much better examples of political memes out there or progressive memes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that people are in on that joke means that they see past a certain type of racism.
A chance to play with all kinds of different nuances against racial stereotypes. Let's go to Windsor, Connecticut, and Dee. Dee, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling in because I thought it was fabulous that you guys are doing this show about memes. So I was actually trying to explain this to my friend the other day who doesn't understand what a meme is, and it's very awkward if you don't have no idea what they are trying to explain them to people.
Yeah.
I was calling also in because there is a video out there that a band made that has so many memes in it. They're just playing like a little rock band. They're just playing like an alternative song, and then all of a sudden you see the little cat with the rainbow behind it flying behind them, or the little troll face, or the Forever Alone. And I just was surprised at how many of those memes I actually knew, because I didn't think I actually knew that many. But there's like 30, 40, probably all the memes I can think about. The little spray can guy from the Occupy movement, and they're all in there.
Like one song just jammed and jammed and jammed with memes, and you recognize them because that's what part of your world, that stuff flowing by, Dee.
Right, right. Like, because I'm on Tumblr, and that's actually where I found a lot of the memes, that and like Reddit and Know Your Meme, that website. Thank you so much, because sometimes I'm confused, and going to that helps me figure out which one, like, what meme goes with what, like First World Problems or Forever Alone. The Socially Awkward Penguin one, my favorite, because it applies so well.
Yeah, First World Problems, that's a funny one. It's describe it for us, Christina, where it's like they're contrasting, you know,
right.
Forget where I park my car versus can't find anything to eat today.
Right, yeah. And First World Problems is basically a way to highlight kind of the ridiculous things that frustrate and annoy us, but also at the same time, like, bespeak a certain amount of privilege. So I think my favorite First World Problem from one of my friends was, oh, I know this guy who has too many cars to fit in his garage, and so he has to park some of them at my house, right? That's a First World Problem.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't really feel bad for that guy.
You do not. And then there's just, rainbows, our caller Dee was talking about. And Dee, thanks for your call. Here's 2010. Paul Vasquez uploaded a video of himself to YouTube in which he is in awe of a rainbow, but not just any rainbow.
Whoa, that's a full rainbow. All the way. Double rainbow. Oh my god. It's a double rainbow all the way. Whoa, that's so intense. Whoa. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Woo!
Oh, settle down, Paul. Human awe in all its mimetic glory right there. Chase in Virginia Beach, Virginia. What meme have you got for us, Chaser? What do you know?
Hey, yes, sir. I just wanted to kind of comment on almost the difference between these memes as you guys are discussing it and also, like, these internet sensations, where I think a meme is something where, as you guys discussed previously, where you can put your own spin on it and develop it to be something that's your own. And then through the process of, quote-unquote, the internet, people vote, be it by clicks or by votes on a website like Reddit, where you can kind of filter things out to the top by what people like the most. And, you know, I just think it's really awkward and interesting of how someone can sit behind their monitor and be a completely different person and express completely different views versus when they're out in public and what they want to say there. So I think it's pretty interesting how you kind of compare how socialization is transferring towards the internet versus, you know, how people would act around their peers.
Yeah, we have multi-layered, Janice face lives these days very often. I mean, first, thanks, Chase. Brad, do you do this kind of ranking at Know Your Memes, or is that a Reddit thing alone? And what does that mean about the world of memes, that the whole world is sort of saying what's significant, what's worthy, what's tops?
Right. Well, first off, I think given the current circumstances, meme is definitely a working definition, right? I think in the absence of a reliable measuring stick, meaning either a metric or some sort of way to make a qualitative assessment, it's kind of difficult to do cross comparisons of multiple memes. And
well, we have YouTube views. A lot of people look at that like it's viewed a million times on YouTube. That's got a lot of attention.
Right, but I think one thing that also needs to be taken into account is just the sheer growth rate of the internet in itself. So if we were to compare the view counts of Kony 2012 or Rebecca Black to, say, something that something that was trending, say, like 10 years ago, something like Dancing Baby or Hamster Dance, these things become more and more difficult and ambiguous in terms of, I guess, a relative comparison. Yeah. So really, the things that we're doing now on our site is more of an investigative reporting approach where we, you know, literally Google on a subject for hours and hours to just dig up the history of it and then combine that with our community consensus on this meme. And, you know, we combine those two together and we try to make a better sense out of it and as clear terms as possible.
Of course, if it's a great meme, I guess the sense made out of it is quite direct, maybe quite personal, but it's got something in common that people are responding deeply to. We're talking about memes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Buffalo, New York, and Mateo. Mateo, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just calling about an adjective animal meme.
Okay.
And the animal is actually a man. It's privilege denying dude, I believe it is. And it references a lot of really casual, rude dismissals of claims that women or feminists might say. For example, oh, you're just being oversensitive, stuff like that. Or, oh, I don't benefit from privilege, you know, et cetera.
So this is like an image of a cocky male, and it's the privilege denying dude. He's privileged, but he denies it.
Yes, exactly. And it can actually, you were talking about how Shakespeare provided more than just kind of lewd humor, which he actually often did, contextualized. But they can actually hold a political place. And those can be stuff like privilege denying dude can be useful for both pointing out that kind of thing and also be cathartic for people in, say, feminist communities who are like, oh, yeah, I've had to deal with that guy.
So there's real utility and real impact. Mateo, I really appreciate your call from Buffalo. I mean, Occupy itself, right. A meme that took off. I mean, you see the sort of merger right. Of the virtual and the very real material people on the ground.
Absolutely.
Christina.
I think memes are whatever people whatever is relevant to people at the time. And I think that privilege denying guy is a great example. And I would actually argue against, earlier we were talking about ranking memes. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's about a singular ranking. It's not like a Billboard Top 100. Mm-hmm. It's more important that anyone can create a meme and send it off to their various communities, mm-hmm. be it real or virtual.
Yep.
So feminists can start their own memes. But also, people in incredibly marginalized situations can start mm-hmm. their own memes. And
sort of for microculture, and it can be sustaining for them.
Right, yeah. And I think earlier the caller was saying that, people can act a different way online. Some people say that when you're online and you're anonymous, that turns you into kind of a mean, terrible person.
Mm-hmm.
But it also allows, suburban kids in really rural places to be gay or to be a minority or to express all
kinds
of their
really
identity.
Say what they really feel. Yeah. One more call. Philadelphia, Andrew. Our time is short, Andrew, but you're on the air.
Sure. Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I just want to make a quick comment about those people that are dismissing memes. I just think for the modern generation, it gives, especially the younger generation, it gives them a vehicle and a means to communicate, whereas, previous generations did not have that tool. So you're going to get a lot of people that had something to say, and they're going to say it through these memes, whereas, previously people couldn't do that. And I think there's a lot of value in that. Yes, there might be something that might not have some significance, but you're going to get those diamonds in the rough coming from these memes, I think. We really shouldn't be dismissing that.
Andrew, no question about it. I mean, you could dismiss rock and roll in 1950-something, and you would find yourself on the wrong side of history. Memes, Christina, it seems to me today, in all their variety and all their range from profundity to just momentary silliness, collectively, this is a culture being created with a lot of deep commentary in it.
Yeah, I think it is our culture. It's the way that the newer generation is choosing to express itself. And I really like the meme Stuff Girls Say was a video that came out, and
mm-hmm.
I'm censoring that for the
yes,
radio.
Yes, a little bit, yeah.
But, the thing I found really compelling about that was people started making their own versions of it. So mm-hmm. it started off as Stuff Girls Say, a way to make fun of a certain type of girl.
Yep.
But then this video came out called Stuff White Girls Say to Black Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the most insightful pieces of social commentary. And it was created in this way that, a spoonful of humor makes a lot go down.
A lot of honesty possible.
Right, and I think a lot of people watched that video and said, oh, crap, I do say that to black girls. That's kind of racist.
And there it is. And suddenly, we're recognizing ourselves in this world of memes. Christina Shih with RuffleCon. It's coming right up. Good luck with your big conference
Thank
this year,
so
Christina. And Brad Kim with KnowYourMeme.com joining us from New York. Thanks so much, Brad.
Thank you, Tom.
Here's a meme. Rebecca Black, last year, just all over the place, suddenly everybody hit dislike, but it's a sensation. It's a lasting meme. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.